If the phrase, just make it a habit, has ever activated your fight or flight response, welcome to the club. Hi, I'm Dr. Regina, PhD, and welcome to Divergent Paths, where we make your weirdness feel like home. You may know me from Nerd Notes, my neurodivergent education resource discussion newsletter. If you're not signed up, what are you waiting for? Join me and a community of late-diagnosed neurodivergent nerds as we figure out what works for our brains. Today, Russ and I are going to talk about habits and habit culture and why it doesn't seem to work for neurodivergent folks. We're going to explain the neuroscience, why we struggle with making habits stick, and what actually works for our weird and wild brains.
You know, and what's funny about this episode, Regina, is I was going to say, you know, we need to get the habit of doing recording this at a certain time. I literally almost said that without even knowing the topic. So it's kind of interesting that that's the topic today.
This is the topic. Yeah. And you're already thinking about how we like don't really do habits particularly well.
Yeah. Right. Right. Well, you know, there's so many apps for habits, right? The habit tracking app, the drink your water, the do this, the do that, the get in the good habit. And if you do something for a certain amount of time, then it does become right. Habit and you just do it at that point. And that is true. You know, there's things that I just get into the habit of doing and do. Where it becomes a problem, I think, is trying to like force a habit, you know, and like force it like, oh, I have to do this, so I'm going mm-hmm. to do this. Because when I think about that language, I think about some of the stuff that you've talked about in other episodes. Yeah. And the whole have to part of that.
Yeah, don't make it a demand, right? Regina, because then your demand avoidance. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then your demand avoidance is going to kick in and you're not going to watch the movie until you know, you decide your nervous system decides it's okay. But I mean, that's part of the problem, right? If we're dealing with neurodivergent folk who have an interest-based nervous system and you're trying to impose a system of not just have to's, like habits can be things that you want to do, but we really don't have the wiring for that sort of traditional habit-making systems. Like those don't really work for mm-hmm. neurodivergent people because a lot of the different things that we've talked about, demand avoidance and interest-based nervous systems being among the top reasons why they don't really work.
Okay. So tell me, what's happening in your brain when you try to build a habit, but you find it like falls apart after a couple of days?
Well, I want to make sure we understand. So sort of habit culture is like essentially what you talked about. Like, okay, mm-hmm. there are these ideas that people have about how you form a habit. And a lot of it is based in what we might call like a bootstraps ideology, where you just make yourself do something, right? And that isn't something that's going to help a neurodivergent brain do a thing.
Right.
So there are sort of three main things that fail in your wiring when you're trying to make a habit. So I've talked a lot about how we have it's not even that we have inconsistent amounts of dopamine in our brain. It's just that the dopamine doesn't find its way to the receptors that let you use it. So it just kind of gets lost in there. So the fact that you can't consistently say this, you know, you don't have a brain that's like, okay, this much dopamine is going to show up so I can get stuff done, right? That, mm-hmm. just that alone makes making habits difficult.
Okay.
And because we don't have that sort of straight line of dopamine production, that inconsistency doesn't allow us to have consistent rewards, and making something into a habit doesn't really happen. So for a lot of neurodivergent folk, what they will realize is people who have more consistent dopamine pickup just do things without thinking about them. There's very little in the day that I don't actively think about doing. And I will credit my friend Rachel for this. I never think about putting on my seatbelt when I get in the car.
Right.
Never think about it. Just do it. It just happens. It's not something I think about, but that is one of a handful of things. I don't think about emptying the lint trap I always remember to empty lint trap. I don't know why. Every time I open the door of the dryer, if it's empty and there's no clothes in it, or there are clothes in it, the first thing I do is empty the lint trap. I do not think about that. But those are among like a handful of things that I don't think about. I think about brushing my teeth. I think about going to brush my teeth. I don't have a set like habit of getting up in the morning and doing XYZ. I have to think about everything I do in the morning. So not being able to have that autopilot to run on means habits are harder to form. So that's one piece of it. The other piece I mentioned already is the interest-based nervous system, which we've done an episode about. Like if you're not interested in doing it, it's hard to do it. You can't really create a sense of urgency, wanting to do it. You know, the intention around it isn't enough. And like, you know, you have to get that like spark to get you going. Mm-hmm. And so the last piece is the, you know, basal ganglia automation, which is like what I was talking about, having that just doing it, where you can just have an automatic routine that runs for you. You might have an automatic routine for making coffee, but getting to making the coffee might have, you know, a whole bunch of other things that happen in the way of it.
I mentioned the apps a second ago.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the things I was talking about just yesterday at work was the annoyance of some of the like AI apps in their responses to you that are like, you're absolutely right, blah, 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 blah. So right. You can actually program AI to not say certain things. And the reason why they're bad at that, of course, is because people are so annoyed by getting those same responses. The other thing, of course, is your reminders app and these habit tracking apps. I've deleted so many of those habit tracking apps because of the annoying alerts. I feel like it's judging me.
You know? Right. Well, like, and it's like anything else. Like it just becomes fatigue, right? It just becomes noise, right? Yeah. And notifications are, I ignore notifications all the time.
Right.
So how do you make them, you know, how do you make them urgent enough? So like if I know, I learned this from another friend, I won't, if I have a reminder to like have lunch, like you've talked about like having a set time on your work schedule for lunch and having that set out. And with structured days, I think that that's important, especially since you have a lot of people booking meetings with you. If I know I'm going to have a day where I have a lot that I need to focus on, I will set the timer on my oven to remind myself to eat.
Okay.
And it needs to be the timer on my oven.
Because that pulls you into the kitchen to turn it off.
It forces me into the kitchen to turn it off. If I set an alarm on my phone, that's not going to do anything. I am just going to turn it off. But my timer on my oven, not my like my microwave, just does like one ding and that's going to do nothing, will continue to play this annoying music until I get up and turn it off.
Right.
And that's the only way that works is I have to break where I am and what I'm doing and get up and go into the room I need to be in. And then when I'm there, I'm like, oh, I really should eat. Right. And then I'm like, okay, well, I'm here. I might as well do this now. Right. And that.
Nice.
Right. Because that breaks, it will break. And I get mad sometimes because it breaks hyperfocus, which, you know, can be a very frustrating experience to be in the middle of something.
Right.
But it is important to take care of your bodily functions, and eating is one of those things that we do have to do to actually survive. So it is important to do it. But yes, it will break me out of that, like, you know, I'm stuck here thing happening. But it has to be out of the room and it has to be happening somewhere else. And like, it can't happen on my home speaker devices, which I won't say the name of because it will
activate. Exactly.
Because I have one of those in every room, right? So like I can't do that because then I can turn it off from anywhere. You know, it would be nice if they put some like neurodivergent programming in those where you can say, okay, play this alarm on this one and only let me turn it off if I'm in that room or something like that. You know, that would help. Right. But yeah, use your oven, use a timer that you can, or even if you, you know, use a timer that has to be turned off, and you have to get up and get to it to turn it off.
It's really, it's figuring out your own life hacks, right? It's like figuring out like how to hack your brain in, in these interesting ways that will motivate you to do something, because it's hard to, you know, because of what you were saying earlier, the things that you were listing at the beginning of the show, it makes it where it's not easy, you know, makes it where it's not easy to do this. And, it might feel like easy the first time you do it, right? Mm-hmm. Like the first time you like
go into a habit mode, you're like,
oh, this is easy.
Yeah, I'll get a new habit tracker app and, you know, I'll be super into it for 4 to 6 weeks. And then it becomes boring and I, you know, drop it and I'll run a streak on something, you know, on my, you know, I'll run a streak on an app or, you know, I have a long running reading streak on my Kindle, you know, and so like, only for weeks now, not for days. For a long time, I had more than 2 years that I had read every day on my Kindle. And then I lost it, you know, and I didn't read for 2 days and I didn't even notice. And then it was gone. And I was like, oh, no.
There's my streak.
You know, but I will run a streak sometimes for things. But even those lose their efficacy after a while. So, you know, so one of the things that I'm talking about here with like the, you know, set your timer in another room is an environmental clue, you know, so cue, an environmental cue that you're using your environment to help you do something, whatever that something is. One really good one is if you want to, like, in the evening, if I'm watching a TV show, I want to do some yoga or I want to stretch. So my yoga mat is next to my TV, which may not be the most, you know, aesthetically attractive choice. But the fact that it's there and I'm looking at the TV and I look at the yoga mat, I will pull the yoga mat out and I will do some stretches and I will loosen up, you know, some of the sore muscles I have. And just that, that's an environmental cue to do it. It's right there. Now it does blend in the background sometimes. If I'm too stressed out, I will not see it sometimes. So I'll have to move which side of the TV it's on.
Right.
You know, to reignite my noticing of it. Cause it's like, oh, that's there instead, you know, so things like that.
I kind of want to know more. Like, tell me more about the cues that you're looking for. Like, give me like, Because here's the thing. I mean, it might work the first time, right? You see the yoga mat the first night and you're like, oh, I'm going to go do this. Mm-hmm. But it's like that next time you try to go do it, do you have to change the cue or are you like, or the like, do you have to sometimes constantly change these things? Because it's, I'm sort of like thinking about the app that you said after 4 weeks or 6 weeks, once your streak is broken on it, then it's done. So is variety sort of helpful in that motivation as well?
Yeah, variety is helpful. You know, moving things around is helpful, changing things. You know, I have rearranged how I organize my clothes in my closet, you know, probably once a year at least in my lifetime. I have put different systems in because I get tired of whatever system I have and I stop keeping it up. Mm-hmm. I have rearranged how I keep like things in the kitchen and how I have triggers for doing different things with food and cooking, things like that, you know, having that. I do keep, I'm going to show Russ because we're on video, you know, I do keep my vitamins on, my vitamins have to be out. I can't keep my vitamins in a cabinet, but I will, if they get pushed too far back on my desk, I will forget to take them. So like they have to like be pulled up. I need to regularly sort of clean my desk off and like rearrange things so I see things again.
I have a small office space in my house and I've reorganized it a dozen times or more over the last, you know, like 4 years. I've moved things around. But what I found is if my monitor is facing towards the window and like, even though I'll keep the blinds closed a lot of the times, like facing that direction, like it doesn't work for me. I actually get more tired. I get like bored. I can't focus as much. When I shifted the monitor and I added like a wing to the desk, so now it's like an L, And I put the monitor on the L instead of in the main spot that it was before. Uh-huh. And I'm more open where I can see out the door. I can see out the window. Ah. I'm more productive. Now, the problem is, of course, I can't stand because I don't have the little standing desk for this. So I just got a little thing for the monitor that's going to allow me to now stand, which will level it up even more. So it's like right. I'm taking aspects of what I did before where, oh, I could stand before. Can't mm-hmm. do that now. This works better. So now I'm assuming that the standing thing is going to work better. So now
right.
it's sort of like I'm competing against myself to what's going to yes. make me the most effective. And I just keep making these little moves. And it's sort of, you know, I'm using that marketing brain of like, let's just test one thing at a time so exactly. that I know what that does. Now, if the move of the monitor didn't work, then I would just move it back, right?
Right.
But yeah. now that it's in this spot, okay, now let's test standing. So I'm trying to do these yes. little things to try to test each little thing, each step of the way to see what's mm-hmm. going to work better.
And I think the real strength you have here in how you're approaching this, and this is something like I would say I do the same thing. That's one of the reasons why I redo my closet, because I figure out something that works and then I redo the rest of the system because, oh, this is working.
Yeah.
And then I rebuild it. There's two things that are really good about what you're talking about. One is the self-reflection, the taking the time to look at and recognize what's working and not judging yourself if it's not. Like, you're not judging yourself because the way your desk was facing was making you tired. You're like, it's just my environment is impacting me in a way that is right. not helping me. Right. So you mm-hmm. didn't judge it. You had some self-reflection. You're like, let me try this. And then you tried that and you're like, okay, this is working, but I think I can do another piece better. And there's no shame involved in any of this. Right. Because right. one of the things about habit culture and being neurodivergent is this shame that you carry about the fact that you can't develop habits the way everybody says you should be able to develop habits. Just do something a bunch of times over and over again, and it will become habit is not the way our brains work. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not, it doesn't, it's not supportive. It's not, you know, helpful. It doesn't get you anywhere you need to get. So like being able to remove that shame, I think is really important. And the second is the adaptability, because you are talking about, you know, okay, if this didn't work, I just move it back. Like, you know, there is a lot of black and white thinking that comes with divergent brains. Like there's a lot of good or bad, right or wrong. You know, I need to do this one way because this is the way it's supposed to be done. And you're taking sort of all of that out of it. And that's an amazing process. And that really is what if you're going to try to create new patterns of behavior for yourself, that is the way you want to do it, right? You want to move it away from this like, oh, I just need to have the motivation and I will do this for 21 days and it will become a habit. And it's like, no, in that 21 days, like take that 21 days and see after 2 days, how did I feel with my monitor here? Right. You know, right. after a week, okay, I noticed that I was productive on this day, but not this day. Like, what was different? Like, that kind of reflection will help you build systems that support you versus you taking somebody else's system and trying to fit yourself into it.
It all needs to be customized so much to
yes.
the individual, right? Like, you've got to figure out your path.
Mm-hmm.
And doing that on your own can be tough, but doing that with Regina can be fun.
Exactly. Yes, yeah. I am booking new clients. So please check the show notes. I offer a 30-minute clarity call where we can talk about one or two things that allow you the chance to grow like this, to process and accept and find beautiful new ways to do things that support you and your fabulous neurodivergent brain.